This is the Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. I'm your host, Gary McGraw, CTO of Cigital and author of Software Security. This podcast series is co-sponsored by Cigital and IEEE Security and Privacy Magazine and syndicated by Search Security. For more, see www.computer.org/security and www.cigital.com/silverbullet. This is the 91st in a series of interviews with security gurus, and I am super pleased to have today with me Caroline Wong. Hi, Caroline.
Hi, Gary. Good morning.
Caroline Wong is Cigital's Director of Security Initiatives. In that role, she's responsible for planning, executing, and measuring software security initiatives worldwide. Before joining Cigital, Caroline led product management at Symantec and managed security teams at Zynga and eBay. Caroline's book, Security Metrics, is evidence of her thought leadership in the field. She's a regular speaker at major security conferences as well. Caroline has a BS in EE and CS from UC Berkeley. She was awarded the 2010 Women of Influence One to Watch Award by the Executive Women's Forum, and she lives in San Francisco. So thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So let's start with the BSIM. BSIM 5 will be released October 30th with a BSIM Europe launch party in Amsterdam. Everybody who's listening is invited. The new release includes data on the software security activity of 976 full-time SSG members in 67 firms controlling the work of 272,358 developers. So you help collect the data for BSIM 5. Tell us about that and about sort of BSIM behind the scenes from your perspective.
Sure, absolutely. So to give a little bit of background and why I personally am interested in the BSIM, I'm going to speak to some of the things that Gary mentioned in my bio. I started off working in information security at eBay, and I built a security metrics program at that time. It was very interesting to me to think about the problem of how does an organization apply limited resources to what's really an infinite problem. Mm-hmm. I think Dan Gear did a great job of talking about the inherent asymmetry of information security, mm-hmm. which is to say that, you know, from an attacker perspective, they only have to find and exploit one vulnerability in order to achieve a successful attack. However, from the protector side, we've got to guard against all possible attacks. And so it's this inherently sort of unfair problem that we've got. From my practitioner experience at eBay and Zynga, I came to know very well that any organization is going to have limited resources to apply to this problem. Mm-hmm. Limited money, limited headcount, and therefore, you know, what's really interesting about being in information security is how do you choose to invest the resources that you have?
Exactly. It's sort of an efficiency and effectiveness problem.
Absolutely. And so what is so cool to me about BSIM is that, you know, it's quite different from one of two, in my personal opinion, weaker models of going after security metrics. The first of those is a prescriptive model. There are some great examples of ideas about what people should do in software security put out by folks like OWASP and SANS, you know, but these really came from smart people who said, I think we should do this.
Hey, wait, I wrote one too in 2006. Don't forget mine.
Yep, Gary McGraw's Digital Touchpoints, another excellent example of something that's prescriptive, you know, and given the relatively early maturity of software security as an industry, it makes sense that thought leaders and smart people would say, you know what, let's try and do this. But that's very different from saying, what do people actually do?
Yeah.
And so having participated in interviews with firms that are doing their BSIM assessments, it really is fascinating. Number one, what's striking to me is the amount of information that people are willing to share with us as a trusted partner. And number two, the similarities across the globe as we look at these 67 organizations in 12 different industry verticals. I think that, you know, before Gary, you and Sammy and Jacob and Brian, you know, started the whole BSIM practice 5 years ago, no one really knew what was going on. You know, people could theorize about it. People could say, well, this is what I'm doing. But nobody had the data that we have today.
Yeah, you know what else? The people that were doing it didn't even know each other. That was the most surprising thing to me.
Yep, absolutely. Next month, we've got the BSIM 5 conference coming up in Virginia, and it's really taking this sort of science experiment of what are people doing to the next level and sharing information on how are people doing this in the real world? How ought we to be doing this kind of thing?
So I guess the data part is something that's hard for people to understand. Can you explain the process of scoring that we use based on independent observation of a set of interviews?
Absolutely. So Gary, as you know, when you guys started out, you know, you went in the first year and you interviewed 9 firms and you pretty much simply said, what do you guys do for software security? And you wrote those things down. And year after year, we look at the number of participants in the BSIM. We have these same conversations. And we simply say, you know what, this is an activity that we're observing here. Here's another activity that we're observing. Here's an activity that we're not observing. And what we provide to the firms that ask us to come in and do BSIM assessments is a scorecard that says, hey, you know, we look for about 100 or so activities that real-life firms do in software security. Here's how you measure up. And here are some graphs and some pictures that can show you how do you compare to the rest of the organizations that we've measured? How do you compare to those that are specifically in your industry? And really useful data like, hey, in each of the 12 practices that we look at, you know, what are some common activities that a lot of folks are doing that you're not? And should you think about, therefore, investing into those activities? And on the flip side, you know, what are those activities that very few people are doing, you know, and why are you doing that? What's the specific business driver? What's the specific interest? And this really allows people to use real-world data from their peers to kind of rethink, where am I today in my program? Where do I want to go? And how can I leverage the power and the knowledge of this worldwide community to help me make those decisions?
And they can track that over time. Some firms have been measured 3 times, in fact. But one thing I wanted to get to was, we don't just go in with a clipboard and say, do you guys do AA 2.3? It's much more of a conversation that is around things like, you say, oh, you have 15,000 developers. Good Lord, that's a lot. How do those people learn about software security? Tell us about how you train them. And then we do a lot of listening. And the listening's done by independent observers, and then we score independently, and then we get together and have a big old fight. You've participated in a bunch of those fights. How's that go?
It's really interesting. You know, I think that whenever there's a story being told, people may hear it different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, typically when I've done this, it's myself, either you, Gary, or Sammy Miguez, and one of our managing consultants. And we go through and we say, hey, this is what I heard. Is this what you heard? You know, sometimes we'll debate whether an organization is fulfilling the spirit of what we're looking for in an activity versus, you know, following sort of the letter of the law.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end of the day, what we're able to provide to the firm is something that we feel quite proud about in terms of the integrity and in the consistency of the scoring methodology.
Yeah, it's sort of amazing when you show the results of those interviews to the firm that you've measured. They just go, holy cow, how did you do that?
No, there's a big difference between a chief information security officer saying to someone on their staff, hey, you know what, you're in charge of software security, you know, go make a program, and then for us to come back and say, you know, we've talked to not only your software security group, but we've talked to members of the development team, of the QA team, of your testing teams, of your operations teams, and this is what we're actually observing.
Right.
So I have had an opportunity to participate in some of those readout calls, and it's really really satisfying to hear the person who asked us to do this assessment say, wow, you know, there's data here that I didn't know about before.
Yeah,
and I think that's really the power of real life data gathering and metrics.
Yep, that's absolutely right. And the other thing that happens is the wishful thinking washes out. I remember long ago when we went to Adobe right after Brad Arkin had started, and Brad had huge plans, but he wasn't doing them yet. And I kept on saying, Brad, what you're gonna doesn't count. It has to be what you are doing. And amazingly, they've made a huge amount of progress over there. You can actually see it. Are things perfect? No. But boy, did they have a big ship to turn, and it's slowly turning in the right direction. BSIM5 introduces a new activity. You said there are about 100 activities. There turn out to be 112. And that activity is CMVM 3.4, which is about configuration management and vulnerability management. It is operate a bug bounty program. So when you were working at Symantec or Zynga or eBay, did you have a bug bounty program?
We did. Symantec has a bug bounty program. I personally was part of one of the product groups in Symantec, so we were engaged in the bug bounty program. The general idea is, you know, an organization says, hey, you know, we really value the knowledge of what kind of vulnerabilities exist in our system. You know, we have done what we can to proactively prevent these bugs from occurring, to test and identify them, to fix them, you know, but if someone else can find something and if they tell us, then we'd much rather they let us know rather than exploit it, sell the information. And so it's really kind of a monetary incentive to doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Is it a no-brainer having a bug bounty program? Because it doesn't seem like a no-brainer to me. Like,
you know what? It is quite complicated, actually.
I don't mean the act of doing it. I mean the whole decision to do it in the first place.
Sure, absolutely. I think that whenever you put a monetary incentive out there, you know, you've got a budget for it. How much are you going to pay out every year? You know, what kind of uptake do you expect in your program? You know, what sort of other things are folks going to be motivated to do that maybe you didn't intend? So, you know, when you go out to the public and you say, hey, I'm gonna pay you to do this thing for me, it's really a matter of putting together the whole business model to figure out how's that going to work in real life.
Mm-hmm. And so for some firms, that may not make any sense at all.
Absolutely.
So that's another thing to emphasize about the BSIM. It's not, you said, prescriptive, but it's also not really saying you have to do all these things. In fact, no firm does all the things in the BSIM. It's sort of the union of all the things that all the 67 firms do. We'll be right back after this message. This is Gary McGraw, your host for the Silver Bullet Security Podcast. If you like what you're hearing here, you should check out my monthly security column published by Search Security and Information Security Magazine. You can find the most recent column at searchsecurity.com/McGraw. All of my writings are collected on my webpage at www.sigital.com/gem/writings. Thanks for listening. So when we set out to create the BSIM, we thought we might discover the one true software security methodology for all time, or maybe two, one for FIs and one for ISVs, and we didn't. Yet many firms in the SMB market, that is small and medium-sized businesses, need more guidance to get started with software security. What is SSI in a box, and what is it that you're working on now?
Sure. So, you know, today a lot of the organizations that participate in the BSIMs are organizations that have known for 1 to 10 to 15 years that software security is a priority for their organization, and they're willing to invest a lot into it. As the days go on, you know, more and more of everything in our world is dependent on software. And so really everything. I mean, if you think about, you know, running through a typical day, you know, you wake up in the morning, you're woken up by technology. You know, you go throughout your day, and if we think about all the dependencies we have on technology throughout our lives, it's really a lot. So organizations that are not necessarily creating software, you know, maybe they're not the Microsofts or the Adobe of the world, but maybe they're still interested in building software security because maybe a regulator is saying, hey, this is an important thing to do. Maybe a customer is saying, hey, I am going to be using the code that you're developing, and therefore it's important to me that you have a software security program. These folks look to Cigital as the experts and say, hey, can you tell me how to get started? You know, really all I know about software security is that there's some pen testing involved. You know, is that right? And we turn around and we say, actually, you know, from our perspective, there are these governance things that you ought to put in place. There are these engineering things that you ought to put in place. And so we've got sort of this very specific guidance to provide to organizations who are just getting started so that they know what to do and they can make the most efficient use of their limited resources.
So though the BSIM doesn't tell you what to do, we're very happy to tell you what to do based on our experience. That's an important distinction. The BSIM is just the measuring tool that we use for that stuff. And I want to talk about measurement and metrics because that's, you know, a big part of your world. You wrote a book on security metrics that the world really needs. Is your book more about science or is it more about management?
That's a great question. My book is actually more about management. In my mind, there's really kind of four ways that people think about security metrics. One of them is what I call the TEL way. This is the best practices, the OWASP, the seven Cigital touch points. Another way is the GATHER way. So, you know, what we're doing in BSIM, going out and picking up information and saying, you know, what exists out there. My book is really about the study and the goal way. It's really about setting a goal and achieving that goal. I really like to use the analogy of running a marathon. And I think that I would certainly have different results if one day I got up in the morning and I said, you know what, running is a good thing to do. I'm going to go run today. And maybe I would do that for several months, you know, but I might not, with that approach, be able to actually run a marathon. On the flip side, if I said, you know what, I'm going to run a marathon in 4 months. I'm going to sign up for this training program. I'm going to set myself up for success. You know, I'm going to perform my activities, and I'm going to track them, and I'm going to, you know, look at their outcomes. Then maybe I set myself to actually accomplish a goal.
You just need
one
of those little
metrics.
One of those little things that you put on your wrist, right?
Exactly, exactly. Gather some data about how fast and how far did I run today, you know, talk to my coaches and say, hey, you know, I've got this knee problem. But I like to use that as an analogy. I think that in the world of information security, folks do an awful lot of testing. You know, maybe they do some remediation. Maybe they do some prevention. But a lot of focus happens to be on testing today. Mm-hmm. And in my mind, you know, you can look around for problems, you know, and you can find all the problems you like, but unless those problems are getting fixed, unless they're getting prevented, and you're thinking about how to prevent more problems from happening in the future, then that's you're not going to get anywhere in the long term. So I really sort of talk about a goals-oriented approach to security metrics.
So computer security has been said to be about, quote, getting nothing to happen. That is, make sure that you don't have anybody attacking and breaking in and succeeding in attacking you. So what are the most successful metrics that you've used in your own career?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the big ones was when I was working at eBay, and we had kind of a similar situation as I just described, which is to say we spent a lot of our time on security testing and finding issues, and security being sort of an area that requires buy-in from many different stakeholders and sponsors, you know, security would go to dev and say, hey, you know, we found these problems, please fix them. You know, and dev would say, well, you know, we've got all sorts of other priorities that we ought to be focusing on right now.
Those aren't the only bugs we know about. Turns out we have a whole bug tracking system full. Just add yours in there.
Yep, absolutely. And so, you know, we found that we weren't getting a lot of traction. We were having a similar conversation over and over again, really with similar results. And so what we did was my CISO, Dave Cullinane, at the time, and our VP of product development, James Bressy, got together and said, you know what? We think it's really important to drive down the number of vulnerabilities that we have in our code. Let's set a goal. And we had the conversation to say, how long are we going to spend on this effort? You know, and what sort of target are we going to reach? And we, within a year's time, set the goal of a 20% reduction in the bugs in our code, which for us was the first time we had really measured, set a goal, and been able to accomplish it in a way that not only did the executives understand, but also the folks on the ground who are making the code happen, making the remediation happen, those sorts were bought into it as well.
Mm-hmm. That's so very that cool. Was, that's a cool story. So how does the BSIM relate to security metrics for software security? So what you've described is a very tangible measurement having to do with vulnerabilities in code. That's pretty easy for geeks to understand. The BSIM is a little bit more esoteric. What's the relationship there?
Sure. So in my mind, we've got our BSIM data pool, you know, and we know what the BSIM firms are doing. When I think about metrics, I think about what should those firms be doing? Are they doing it right? You know, what's the balance and investment between the various activities of testing and remediation and prevention, and what's that sort of right mix? You know, sometimes I think about security investment as, you know, cooking or baking a cake. You know, what is the exact right mix of ingredients for what you're trying to get out of it? And so I think we've got this rich data pool to draw upon and begin to theorize and test some ideas about what's the right mix based on a particular industry, a particular maturity, a particular goal, whether that be, you know, compliance-driven or risk-driven, but kind of taking the data to the next level and drawing some conclusions about what's the best way to go about it.
Mm-hmm. I want to switch gears a little bit. You are very active as a woman in technology at a senior level. Tell us about organizations of women in tech that have benefited you.
Sure. So actually, today, Gary, I am at a conference called the Executive Women's Forum. It was started by Joyce Bricaglia in 2002. And what happened was Joyce had gone to, and I've had this experience myself, you know, security conferences, RSAs, and black hats, you know, and you look around and there's sort of this sea of guys, you know, and not a whole lot of women.
They're all surrounding the two women, I think.
Right. And I mean, the great thing about it is that the line for the ladies' room at a security conference is very short. The not great thing about it is, you know, if I want to be able to, you know, hang out with a group of ladies that do what I do, then it's hard to identify that group. But what happens every year in Phoenix, about 200 of the women who are in management for the information security, risk management, and privacy sectors come together for this conference. And what we do is we talk about a number of technical and business-related topics, but we also talk about personal topics. It's about creating this network of women to help us achieve our professional goals, prepare us to be leaders, and nurture us to kind of get to the next level, whatever that means for each of us. Mm-hmm. So it's exciting, you know, in the world of, you know, thousands and thousands of security professionals, to go to a security conference that's all women is very unusual, and it has some really cool things that come out of it.
That's very cool. So that's the Executive Women's Forum. Is there another group or other groups that you also think are good?
Yeah, so there's Women in Technology, there's Future Women Leaders. Ever since I was in school, you know, kind of surrounded by guys, very few women, working for technology companies, a similar situation, although more women, you know, and then going to security conferences, lots of guys, a few women, I thought to myself, you know, how can I connect with like-minded people in my field? And I found a variety of different resources, and it's great. I'm working with our head of HR at Sigital to put together Women at Sigital, so we'll be kicking that off soon as well.
Cool. Glad to hear about that. We've always tried to proactively hire women. It's a difficult thing Because there's so few. In fact, at what age do you think girls should be hooked into computer science, to STEM outreach programs that we're funding now through the National Science Foundation actually work?
I think that for me, if I think about my personal experience and I look around and I say, why am I one of relatively few women in the room? And I realize that I ended up in computer security totally randomly. I ended up taking a junior level security job because the IT project management job that I wanted had a hiring freeze. I would have never known, seriously, I would have never known how happy and how excited I would have been about this work because I didn't know that that existed.
Right.
And so I think that as a woman in technology, as a woman in computer security, I have a responsibility to try and increase exposure to young women. And in fact, one of the things that we've started at the Executive Women's Forum is called the Cybersecurity School Challenge. Every year we get together in Phoenix, Arizona. Some of us fly in a day early and we go to a local school in Phoenix and we teach kids from K through 8, boys and girls, about cybersecurity, cyberbullying, things that they ought to know. And the idea here
is teach them how to do cyberbullying.
Yep, it's growing up with Facebook as a kid, I think, is a little different than growing up, getting bullied in the playground at recess today. But these are real things that our young people are dealing with, and so we try and increase that exposure. And in fact, this cybersecurity school challenge that I'm mentioning, we formed it as the Executive Women's Forum, but also in partnership with Carnegie Mellon University, mm-hmm. ISC Squared, and the National Cybersecurity Alliance. For any of our listeners, in fact, we've got all of the course materials, and it's specific to each age range. So, if your kid goes to school and they're in kindergarten through eighth grade, you can actually contact us, get those materials, and volunteer at a local school near you in order to expose more kids to the ideas of cybersecurity.
Cool. We'll make sure to put the URL on the webpage for Silver Bullet. I have one other question in this kind of vein of questions. Do you have a specific mentor for your career? And I've heard, there's a lot of talk about mentorships between women in technology for some reason. And I'm wondering what you think about that.
Sure. That's a great question. My answer is that I've been lucky to have a number of mentors throughout my career. When I started out as an intern at eBay in the summer of 2004, I was able to meet Brad Peterson, who was the CIO at eBay. Since then, he's been the CIO of Schwab, and he's currently the CIO of NASDAQ. He's got a daughter now who's in college, and now that I'm several years into my career, he said to me, Caroline, would you mind giving some advice to my daughter? And so I've been able to kind of keep in touch with him. But certainly through the Executive Women's Forum, I've been able to meet women who are CISOs, are, women who have started their own security technology companies. And they look at me and they think, you kind of remind me of me, 10 or 20 years ago. Uh-huh. I'd really like to give you some advice because however I got here, maybe it wasn't easy, but I want to share my story with you so that you can leverage my knowledge and experience. And now for me in my career, I really try and pass that on to more junior women in my field.
So you got into computer security through Brownian motion, and you seem to have run into your mentor also through Brownian motion. Is there a principled way to find a mentor? Is there like a mentor clearinghouse? I mean, do you join Women Executive Forum or?
I certainly encourage folks to learn about the Executive Women's Forum. We have not only the national annual conference, but also local meet and greets. We have a one-on-one mentoring program where folks can sign up and volunteer to either be a mentor or a mentee with another woman in the industry. In general, I think when it comes to networking and mentorship, I'd almost say follow some of the same principles that you would when job searching or when dating. And my personal philosophy to both of those things is you got to cast a wide net. The more people you find yourself exposed to, the more likely you're going to find someone that you connect with professionally and that you can begin to build a relationship with. So I'd say to any of the listeners who are interested in growing their networks, attend conferences, attend regional meetings, participate. One of the things that I love about this industry is how willing folks are to share information with each other and also how open they are to hearing new ideas. Mm-hmm. So I'd say, you know, get out there, make your voice heard, and you're likely to bump into someone that gets along with you.
Okay, I'm going to give you a big doozy of a question, but you only get a minute to answer. All right, you ready? What's your view of the mommy wars situation? Do you think we're making any forward progress addressing this sort of massive sociocultural problem in the U.S.?
Sure. You know, it's a great question. At the bottom line, for me, I think it's a personal decision for every woman, and that we as women, and frankly, we as people, ought to respect that. I think that the reason it's a situation at all is because historically, you know, male and female household roles were very well defined. Today it's all jumbled up and men and women can do all sorts of things if they want to. But at the end of the day, me personally, I'm single, I don't have any kids, but maybe one day I will, and maybe I'll decide to quit work even though I love it. But whatever that choice may be, it belongs to me and me only. And for my women friends and colleagues, whatever choice they make, I support them for.
Wow, awesome. With 15 seconds in the bank, that's like super good. now the last question. You built yourself a really cool bar at home. I've seen a picture of it. I have one at my house too. What is the most interesting drink that you've ever served in your bar?
Ooh, that is an excellent question. Well, Gary, I celebrated my 30th birthday recently.
Oh, happy birthday.
And I invited some friends to join me, and I said, you know, we've got a bunch of booze, but if you have a favorite cocktail, please bring it if you like. And one of my friends from college brought his own sort of strawberry and lemon-infused vodka.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm lucky to have a big bottle of it in my room. So it's totally custom. He made it himself, and that's one of my favorite drinks.
Cool. There you go. You heard it here first. So thanks for your time, Caroline. It's been very interesting.
You're welcome. Thank you again for having me.
This has been a Silver Bullet Security Podcast with Gary McGraw. Silver Bullet is co-sponsored by Sigital, an IEEE security and privacy magazine, and syndicated by Search Security. The September-October issue of IEEE S&P Magazine includes our interview with embedded wireless security expert Wenyuan Zhe, a professor at University of South Carolina. The issue focuses on identity and integrity. See www.computer.org/security for more. Show links, notes, and an online discussion can be found on the Silver Bullet webpage at www.sigital.com/silverbullet. This is Gary McGraw.